Hello, hello, hello. This is Dr. Kyle Fagel, and welcome to the Digital Orthodontist Live. And this is, as you might assume, the first and only live podcast for orthodontists. Tonight, I'm excited to bring you something brand new, at least for this show. And I guess it's probably brand new for any show, maybe on some level, but we'll get to that. For the first time ever, tonight is a TDO Live Top 5. Doesn't that have a nice ring to it? And my guests and I tonight, we're going to come up with a top five, again, in real time, but not without your help. And so you're going to be able to comment in and give us your feedback on the topic, how to make more money. And I think it goes without saying, but money may not define your success. And I think in a lot of ways, probably better that it doesn't define your success, but it certainly does not hurt. And it certainly is a part of success as most of us see it. And at the end of the day, what business owner wouldn't like to take home just a little bit more money? So we're going to get into this later tonight, but there's going to be two basic ways that we can make more money. The more obvious is to bring more money in, but as important is to send less money out. All right, so the challenge is going to be to decide, well, what are our top five strategies as to the best ways to make more money? Let me go ahead and bring my panel on tonight. I'm excited about this group of people. Let's see. And here they are. Look, they were just hiding back there. How's everybody doing?
Great. Doing
great. I was going to say, you can speak. This is time for words. No. Let me read their bios. We'll kind of go in order here. To my left, virtually, I suppose, is Nick Wengler, and he is a former executive officer in the Army, and he has spent 15 years helping leaders launch new products. He is the co-founder and president of Orthodontic Details, which is a one-stop shop that saves practices time and money on supplies. He's joining us from Indianapolis, where he lives with his fiance. Isn't it funny when you can't read a word that you've read, oh, I don't know, 1,000 times? Fiance and two kids. This is Nick Wengler. Nick, tell us very quickly, when did you get a fiance?
Like 2 days ago.
2 days ago. Yeah.
That's right. Indeed. Yeah. Chicago proposed. Yeah,
I was messaging you, and you were like, I've been a little busy, and it was an engagement photo. So, you know, my bad. Okay. My bad.
There's always, right, always time for you.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you, and likewise. All right, moving down to right beneath me, we have Scott Hansen, who is a longtime friend of the show. He's the founder and CEO of Lead Sigma, which is revolutionizing orthodontic practice growth using generative AI and reimagining new patient experiences. Known as one of the orthodontic industry's leading practice growth experts, Scott has generated growth for more than 2,000 orthodontic practices. He helps clients generate more than $1 billion in new production over his career, which is amazing. Prior to Lead Sigma, probably a lot of you know this. This is where I met Scott. He was the founder and CEO of Professional Chats / Ortho Chats, and he also managed his family's practice before exiting both to PE-backed buyers. My good friend and your good friend, Scott Hansen. Scott, how are you, buddy?
So good. So good. And I'm calling from Kansas City. I got to call it out because I'm sure we have some Swifties and some Chiefs fans in the audience.
So. Oh, anywhere you go these days, you have a little bit of both. I'm neither, so go figure. But I am a fan of yours and Kansas City. I love the burn-ins. And then lastly, we have a man that needs no introduction, and I would hope that he wouldn't get one because I don't know how to pronounce his last name. This is Dr. Brad. Tell me how to say it so I don't say it wrong.
Chevatel.
Okay. This is Dr. Brad Chevatel. If you didn't know how to pronounce that because you've only ever seen his name written out on Facebook, join the club. Dr. Brad Chevatel. He is a dentist turned orthodontist, and he epitomizes his Czech surname, Chevatel, which fittingly means hurry up. I love that. Transitioning from, I wonder what Fagla means. Okay, we'll move on. Chevatel, hurry up. All right, so transitioning from military dentistry to orthodontic studies at Baylor, Brad's career path led him to acquire a solo practice in Eugene, Oregon in 2002. Outside of work, Brad takes pride in parenting four children while fueling his passion for marathon running, which is a pursuit that keeps him competitive and energized. Born with a natural knack for saving, Dr. Brad eagerly shares his financial wisdom to help others achieve their goals. Dr. Brad, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great. Just I'm in from Tucson, Arizona. That's my hometown, and now visiting family out here and enjoying spring break. So
nice. Tucson, Arizona, home of the Tweed Course.
Exactly. Yep.
And also home of the movie Revenge of the Nerds. That's where they filmed Adams College, Arizona State. Is that right? Am I correct?
The University of Arizona. Yep.
University of Arizona. My bad. See, I knew I was going to get something wrong. But it is Adams College. If you've never seen Revenge of the Nerds, it was filmed there. Okay. Fun facts. Yep. are over for the night. Now it's on to business. I do see that we have an audience that's gathering. That's nice. Got a lot of really good feedback on this. And I think it's a topic that people are interested in. I mean, it's one that applies to all of us. And so, you know, we've obviously got our orthodontist owners out there. I'm sure we've got a lot of residents out there. I think it's a great topic for residents to be considering, and even some office managers. I had some people ask about that. So whoever you are, thank you for tuning in. Monday night is something you could spend in many different ways, but we are thankful you're spending it with us. I do want to encourage you with this software that I'm using to comment, to ask questions. When we get around to doing the top five, weigh in. Tell us what you think should be in the top five. I love the idea that together we can make this all the better, okay? So that is the goal, so help me with that. I also dropped a link. You can actually authorize StreamYard, that's the name of the app, to then be able to show your photo. Otherwise, it just shows as an anonymous user, which is super lame. But anyway, so if you want to do that, knock yourself out. I do want to show you, before we come back around to it later, our top five board. I'm very proud of this. I created this on Canva, and I think it'll be cool. So we'll come around to this later, but check that out, huh? So nice. we're gonna build our top five together. We've got 16 ideas of things that could make the top five, and then we'll hopefully take some other comments from all of you beautiful people out there. If you're watching this later, you missed your opportunity. Yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say, Kyle, I know that's not a plug, but Canva hadn't been in our discussions before, but what a great cost saving.
Oh, that's great. Brand.
So, yeah,
I'm a huge fan of Canva, and it turns out that I co-own a marketing agency and we do graphic design, but I still love Canva. I mean, it's great.
Canva, that's like a very Swifty thing to do.
Oh, is it? I think so. It depends on what you're making. If you're making like a poster or like a collage of your like junior year in high school, I think that is. But and then you print it off and take it to the concert. It's funny, Canva, you know, Neon Canvas is the company I co-own, if you have never watched this before. And someone asked me, like, is that your thing, Canva? I was like, man, I wish. Wouldn't that be great? So, no, we are not together. Hey, here's somebody who authorized StreamYard. So let's put him up on the screen. Mark, glad to join. Thanks, Mark. Way to get your self, you know, confirmed there with the StreamYard priests. I don't know. All right, so that is where we'll come back to later. So again, get excited. Before we do, I do have one advertisement to read. So get ready, and then we're going to get into business. Okay. So to make this possible, we have a sponsor, and it is Neon Canvas. I just talked about them. I do think this is an important conversation, though, along the lines of making more money. It's not just about getting more new patient leads. It's getting leads that actually show up and start. We support more than 200 orthodontic practices in 50 states, and our digital marketing strategies take the stress off of marketing, and they drive new patient numbers. And we are ready to do the same for you. I recommend a free digital marketing audit. It is manual, it is time intensive, and it is worth your time. And you can do that at neoncanvas.com/audit. That is neoncanvas.com/audit. Okay, enough with the intros. Let's get on with this thing. So how are we gonna do this? Well, let me check my cards. Thank you to Anna for my cards. I do wanna set the stage again with kind of how we're approaching this. And so, yes, our top five tonight is going to be how to make more money. And there are two basic options, okay? And I do have to give credit where credit's due. The three gentlemen on this call, they really did an awesome job helping with the notes and coming up with a lot of the ideas of this. And dare I say, it's the least amount of work I've ever had to do on a podcast and writing the script. So thank you to these gentlemen. And so a lot of these ideas are theirs. And, you know, we'll make conversation along the way so that some of it's mine. But they had this idea, and I agree with it, but there's two core categories for making money. So this is going to help to sort of, you know, this is how we'll view this tonight. You can bring more money in, you can increase your top-line revenue, or you can send less money out. You can optimize your practice and expenses. So we're going to look at several options for each, but first, let's do a little bit on kind of defining the topic, and I think also looking at some maybe key objections or mental hang-ups that are common with orthodontists, at least in the conversations that we have. And so this first question is going to be, it's okay to make money, right? So I think that would be like maybe a common thing is like to this topic, make more money. Oh, well, that's not what makes you a good orthodontist. And hey, no one said that that's what we were saying. But let's talk a little bit about that. I don't know who wants to jump in on this first, but it's okay to want to make more money, right?
Sure.
I think Brad has like the strongest opinion about this and the best.
Oh.
from speaking about it together beforehand.
Yeah. I think for me, the big thing about making more money, it's not for the sake of it. It's, but then you get to choose what to do with it. Right. Number one, it's like, if you want to give more bonuses to your staff, or you want to take bigger trips, or you want to donate to your favorite charity, if you're making more money, you get to choose what to do with it. And I think the biggest, the second thing is that if you can have someone or something in your life that makes either working less and make the same amount of money, or working the same and making more money, it's like having a personal coach or a personal trainer that allows you to do that. So as a marathon runner, for me, it's like, if someone said, hey, the number of miles you're running, you could actually run a marathon 5 minutes faster than what you're doing with my help. Or they said, hey, if you want to run as much as you're running, I could actually, you know, cut that in half and have you run the same time that you're doing. It's just about, I think, that efficiency of using your time wisely. And I guess not just having, if you're going to be in the office, being as productive and as efficient as you can be when you're there, right? And by taking home that most amount of money, it allows you to free up your time to do other things, or to be as productive as you possibly can on the days and time that you're spending there.
I would also like to point out, it's okay not to want to make more money. Like, there are plenty of practices that are very successful. They're great lifestyle businesses already. And you can put a lot of time and effort into building a business to make more money and sacrifice a lot of other things that are important. And so, although, you know, obviously we're going to be talking about how to make more money, it's also okay not to want to do it. So I think it's just an important call out, you know, as we talk about these things. It's not the end all be all. It's not ultimately good, but it does allow us the flexibility to do other things that we might want to pursue.
Yeah, that's something I appreciate about our conversation just in preparing for this, is that the, you know, there's different practices will have different approaches, right? Different orthodontists are at different stages of their life, just like different businesses, you know, in the business world are at different stages. And so the important thing is to consciously decide what it is you're doing. Are you at a stage where you're in more of a lifestyle, you know, lifestyle business? Or are you trying to be conscious about making money, more growth years? There's a VC named Chamath, and he gives an interview where he says, certainly if you are in that kind of role of making more money or in that stage, don't feel bashful about that. Somebody else is going to make that money, and they're going to spend that money they make on the causes that they care about. And so if you care about anything in your life, whether it's your family, or, you know, whether it's, you know, something, a bigger picture thing, you know, that you want to commit dollars towards, then go get the money and bring it in to be able to deploy it the way that you see fit.
Yeah, I like that. You know, I think that orthodontists are naturally competitive individuals. You had to be to get into this. And I recognize, as I say that, hey, only two of us are orthodontists. Okay. But to the two of you, the other two of you are appalled. I didn't want to say it, but everyone here is successful. But I think it's natural to be competitive for a long time. And then at some point, you kind of like reach a point where you're like, I don't really want to be competitive anymore. And I think like that's okay, let's say. I also think that if success for you is just the continued growth and the making of more money and more money and more money, and if your happiness or your idea of success is always out on that horizon whereby you have to achieve more, I don't know that that's really a proven track record on finding, you know, true joy or peace in life. And so a conversation around make more money is not a conversation on how to be fulfilled or how to reach nirvana. And I think there are probably some conversations around money and success from the sort of hyper entrepreneurial mindset standpoint that aren't healthy, I would say. And so I think we are all advocates for a balanced life, and sometimes the gross and nonstop maniacal race for more money doesn't necessarily end up in a good place. If not, it doesn't always, or actually never ends up in a good place. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Real quick, I think I totally agree with that. And I think one of the things when you ask someone, well, how much do you want to make? And the answer is often just more, right? And it's not, not consciously thought through, like, hey, I'm comfortable with this. And I think many people stop and think, what's my number, my retirement number? And oftentimes blow past that and don't stop. But I think also asking yourself, what's my number? Like, what production number do I need at what overhead to get the number that I need to fulfill my dreams and do what I want to now? And I think many people don't stop to question that or ask that. And oftentimes they're chasing someone else's dream, or they're chasing some arbitrary, you know, higher number that's just bigger than where they are. And I think that's not our goal tonight. Our goal is to say, trying to figure out who you are and define what that looks like and say, how do we help you get there? Some things that are going to help you get there faster or help you get there easier.
Yeah. I'm a little self-conscious. I feel soft being like, yeah, it's okay not to make more money. However, there is really only one reason to be in business, and that is to make money. So we can choose a lot of different pursuits. But you know, at the end of the day, if you're a business owner, there is only one reason to have the business. There's a lot of other reasons to have other types of relationships and different things. But when we think about practice ownership or business ownership, it is to make money. So it is a really important topic. Without making money, we cannot use that influence in other capacities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Scott,
yeah.
With that being said, I agree with you. I think that a big thing there for me, I feel that I have a huge responsibility to my employees, right? To feed their families, right? That if our practice isn't successful, or we've got a down month and I'm cutting their hours, right? Or we don't have, you know, the money to do that. It's a huge responsibility. And I think many of us don't stop and think of that burden. At least I feel that when COVID was slow, I'm like, how am I going to take care of these families, right? I've got enough. I could live on through this time, even if I didn't bring any more. So I think you're absolutely right, which is using this money to help other people, especially in our practices, right? Those are the most impactful lives that we can influence and affect.
Yeah, right on. All right, good thoughts. Let's move on to question three. Not that anyone's keeping track of it. I am. Good thoughts to kind of get us started. Most orthodontists, it turns out, did not formally study business or finance, maybe not even informally study these things. But I think because of that, you know, I think that is sometimes where these conversations about business start to irk people, because I'm not a businessman first. I'm an orthodontist. I'm a healthcare professional. I have these obligations a la the Hippocratic Oath and so on. And certainly, and I think I would also be one of the quickest to say, being a great clinical orthodontist most of the time has nothing to do with how good you are at business. Those are separate things. Your chairside manner is a whole nother thing. You know, there's a lot of these like independent, but hopefully synergistic skill sets. But specific to business and finance, probably the best clinical orthodontist out there is not the best financial or business mind. And that's just the way that it is. And should it be that way? Oh, I don't know. I don't care. You know, it just is what it is, right? But because orthodontists have not trained in these things formally, we may, and I'm saying we here, we may not have the skill set to be great at making more money or to understand how to adjust the levers to achieve that. Or maybe it's more of a mindset issue. Maybe we have the skill sets, but we don't have the mindset in the right spot, which is, I think, why we started with a question of mindset is, you got to start with the presuppositional questions first. Do I even want to make more money? You know, like, you got to decide that, because it's going to require a little bit more work. Sometimes really not that much work at all. Sometimes it just requires kind of flipping a switch. But it does require skill set for sure. But between mindset and skill set, what do you think the problems are? What's maybe a bigger problem? Not all at once.
Yeah. Nick, you want to jump in?
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's interesting as you talk to orthodontists is that it seems to be that desire there. There is a desire to get better. I mean, I know enough orthodontists, and certainly those in the room to know, if you are an orthodontist, you've overcome quite a bit to get there. There's a lot of school, there's a lot of work early on, right, to establish that. And so ultimately, what you end up with as you're in the practice, at some point, you're approving payroll, right? So you're the one that ultimately is responsible for those that you're leading in that practice. And so in that world, what I've found is, as I talk to doctors at different stages, is sometimes it is the stage, right, where their you know, their mindsets, maybe it's there or maybe it's not. But either way, one of the things that we talked about kind of in prep for this is that it can be important to establish is as you just think through everything we're going to talk about tonight, but in general, is this thing, this category of a way to save or make money, is this a system for me to establish? Is this something I need to learn as a business leader and I need to become an expert at this? Or do I need to know enough and then I need to find a partner? And there's some things even, and I'll let, you know, the two doctors speak to which are the best fits for these two mindsets, but there's some things where it's totally fine to have a good understanding of a certain area to know who to hire or who to partner with. And there's other things that's probably a system in the practice that should be established, monitored, and then followed. And so I think it, I'd be interested to hear you guys' thoughts on which of those most orthodontists fit within those two mindsets. But either way, it feels like there's a place for you to have that business mindset as you grow your practice and lead your team?
Yeah, I think the differentiation is practitioner versus business owner. Both roles are extraordinarily important. I think the skill set often follows the mindset shift. So when you're thinking about making more money, you should be thinking as a business owner, not necessarily a practitioner. And the big shift is, instead of thinking about what you want to provide patients, thinking about how patients want to consume orthodontic care from you. And I think when we make that shift, and we start thinking from the patient's perspective to grow a business, certainly we want to provide excellent clinical care. But that changes the orientation of the way we deliver service to patients. And it makes it very clear what we should do next so that we can build the skill set. I think just to learn a skill set without the mindset shift, the systems will fall apart because they're not important to you. With the mindset shift, typically stickier.
Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, while we don't learn this in school, I think, Kyle, you introduced me as someone who's, you know, was born saving money. My mom was a coupon clipper, and we went all over town to save money on different things. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about the emotional cost of stuff, but for me, I think the big thing in the practice, it's like, we all have mottos on our wall about we make people smile, the clinician side of things, of like the environment that we want to create. And I think this exactly is a mindset that needs to become pervasive within the practice, right? Which is from the top down, that if you come in the morning with, you know, Starbucks in your hand and, you know, all these things, and you're telling you're not communicating to your staff some of the values that you have, because I've always had a value of, you know, kind of a penny saved is two pennies earned kind of mindset. So when I come into the practice, one of the first things that my role is with a new employee is we have an espresso machine where you push the button, it grinds the beans and you can make it. We provide high quality beans. We provide the syrups and the alternative milks, everything in there. And I just talked to my staff about being conscientious about when they drive in the morning and it costs them $10 at least to stop at Starbucks, that they're working for the first half hour for free every day. And I'm saying, know that you're treating yourself, like, be aware of these things that you're spending your money on personally. And I know a lot of people say, I don't want to be in my staff's personal finances, whatever. For me, that communicates to them, hey, Dr. C's providing high quality beans. He's got a concern for me. He's providing lots of stuff here for me. That when they drop a bracket on the floor, they're scurrying around trying to find it versus throwing it in the garbage and getting a new one, right? That by having this mindset that's pervasive in your practice, that it's got to start, you've got to have it, everybody can be involved, whether that's, hey, we don't let the leaky boat let new patients fall through the cracks, or on the cost savings, we've all got to be involved, that we're not dropping, you know, six drops of, ProSeal in the well, when, you know, kind of a wipe around the top could have done the same thing, you know? And so I think it's huge that there's this mindset that will quickly lead to this skill set. And if you're not doing that, there are people who can help you with it, right? Whether it's these guys here or friends or whoever. So I think I'm
seizing on something you mentioned, which I think is true. And I'm going to criticize orthodontists for a second, if I may. I think, all right, we didn't study business finance, most of us. Most of us have learned in the University of Hard Knocks, you know, we've learned on the go or whatever, which means that there are some holes in that. Just like if you were learning orthodontics on the job, you wouldn't understand some of the foundational and fundamental things that would make you better at doing orthodontics. We believe that as it pertains to orthodontics. As it comes to business, marketing, finances, we've never had those foundational things. So I guess one thing would be, hey, go study that. I think one reason why we are, maybe some of us, undisciplined or even, dare I say, sloppy or maybe unfocused on these business things is because it's so easy to be successful in orthodontics. 100%. The margins are incredible. And so I just want to call that out and say, if we were doing other businesses, it wouldn't be as easy and we'd have to be more disciplined. And the difference in one good month and one bad month might be you have to lay off half your workforce, you know? And so I think we are in a very comfortable petri dish, as it were.
I would just like to add, that's absolutely true. My background is working with Fortune 1000 companies, startups. I've worked with hundreds of startups and I've seen all the perils in there. That said, there is a different type of difficulty in orthodontics that I've seen, which is that it is easier to become complacent. It is easier to become comfortable. And that's a different challenge altogether. That one can sneak up on you. Even if maybe on the kind of the nuts and bolts of, you know, starting up a practice, it's pretty clear, right? It's pretty clear what you need to do, how you, you know, how you can be successful. Whereas launching something that's never existed before, maybe it's not as clear. That said, you become hyper-focused when you're in that more competitive environment. In a way that maybe in orthodontics, sometimes when things are successful, things are working, that's actually just another like level of business difficulty that I feel like is admirable for, you know, both of you here to have paid attention to, and many orthodontists I've met, overcoming that comfort.
So there's a mindset thing is remaining uncomfortable and remaining hungry. But go ahead, Brad.
I was just going to say, I think you're absolutely right, Nick. And for me, it's a passion, right? This competitive spirit of, man, I want to save money. My associate once asked me, you know, what do I like spending my money on? And I jokingly said, I love saving money. I hate spending money, right? And so finding that person in your practice, I think if you have this mindset, there's that person who always comes in bragging about the shirt they bought at TJ Maxx for this price, right? That there's other people in your practice who can help you. So if you are complacent, to be aware of it and be aware where you are maybe treating yourself to the fancy bracket or treating yourself to something in your practice, but being aware of it, right? That if you're not aware, you don't know where the leaky spots are. And so,
yeah. We have a good comment from Mart McClellan. If you know Mart, he knows a lot about money. He also knows a lot about crypto. So if you ever have any questions about crypto, ask Mart. He says, making more money gives us more options to spend and enjoy our wealth to create memories for family and friends and to give to charity and make a difference in society and provide great jobs for our team, sometimes for our family. But yeah, good thoughts. And that's an echo of kind of what was said earlier, but I think it's good and it's well said. And then Doug DePue, another amazing legendary doctor, says, get a good mentor and that can really help with the business aspects. And so I think that would be what I would say to if you lack knowledge in finance or business or systems or whatever, there's probably an orthodontist in a Facebook group that you know that knows a lot more. I mean, honestly, Brad, I don't think we've had a lot of interactions in the past, but we engaged a few weeks ago on some topics and I immediately realized, oh, this guy knows a lot about this topic. You know, so it was like, hey, do you want to be on this podcast to talk about this? I mean, there's just some people that know this stuff way better. It's like, if you want to talk to me about pinball or drums, I can do that all night. The Beatles, come on. But when it comes to like saving money, that's Brad's thing. And to be fair, my dad is the most frugal person I'll ever know. And so I remember, you know, there was the collecting of cans, which we drank too much soda, probably shouldn't have done that. You know, it was probably not good for our health. We probably could have saved money by drinking rainwater that we distilled and cleaned or something, right? But we loved soda, it turns out, growing up in Northeast Arkansas. And we would smash the cans down and take them and get the money for that, which it was never worth the effort and time, but that's just my dad. And he would save a penny at all great lengths. But I learned a lot from that. And it's a lesson that I think, I like what you said about the mentorship opportunity we have with our teams. And I mean, that's the reality of life for a lot of people is, don't have enough money to live the life they want, but they're willing to spend it on things that aren't essential, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's like what Dave Ramsey 101 stuff, you know? But
yeah. Well, I think another key important point that I don't know if you would echo this growing up is that being frugal doesn't mean foregoing things that you want. I think it's finding value in things, right? And assuring that you're okay with spending what you are on something and getting those nice things that you want and maybe less things of the nice things, right? And so I don't want to equate frugality with cheapness, right? Which is I'm buying poor quality things or that I'm foregoing something for my team or my staff, but rather I'm being just acutely aware of where that money's going. And I think much like someone who's on a diet, being acutely aware of what you put in your mouth or how much exercise you're doing, I think that by doing that, you get to dictate what that looks like so that at the end of a month or the end of a year, you're not, hey, I wish I was a different thing, right? If that was lighter, faster, stronger in your personal life, that in your professional life, that a year from now that you can look back and go like, holy crap, I saved $100,000. And not that everyone's looking at, I know on the heels of the DSO concept, but wait, 100 times 8 is $800,000 more in my offer from a DSO, right? So some of these things we're talking about aren't instantaneous. And so if anyone is, whether it's the personal money or whether if you start looking at it as these guys are talking about from a business aspect, Nick and Scott, Nick especially in businesses, and you say, hey, that money that you're spending is really worth 15x that, right? On what your practice is truly worth, right? And whether that's long-term, I know we're gonna get nuts and bolts, don't want to be at a diatribe here, but there's certain things that once you set it and forget it, like a home mortgage at 2% versus a home mortgage at 7%, you're gonna reap those benefits forever by a little bit of work right now. And I hope we're gonna be able to dive into some of those things today, which are, hey, you fix some of these things now, you're not gonna notice a change in your life at all, except that you're getting an extra $2,000 in your bank account for something you did today that you're going to get to reap the benefits of long term. So not equating frugality or managing your money well or bringing more money in the door with cheapness or I guess
low quality or whatever you want to say, right? Yeah, I think there is that idea that, you know, cheap things are not necessarily good things, and I don't think that's true. Now, it does turn out that my dad was both frugal and cheap. And that's okay. But I'm just kidding. No, he's a wonderful man.
A lot about you.
Yeah, no, it does not. All right. So let's jump into this. It's something that Nick mentioned, and I want to come back to it, is sometimes we aren't making as much money as we could in our business. I think that's probably like always true, but some of us more than others or whatever. And maybe that's because there's a problem in the practice and we don't see it or we don't recognize it. Or other times there is a problem, we know it, but we don't do anything to address it. I don't know which is worse, right? But let's talk about this. Nick, you mentioned the idea of sometimes the fix to the problem is not that you yourself as the expert and the enlightened one fix it, but that you look to systems or partners to get this done. So let's talk a little bit about that. Maybe let's first talk, if you want to, about systems. What are some systems maybe that could help you save money that you can implement into your business?
Sure. Yeah. So, when it comes to supply savings in particular, there's some real basics that you can put into place, right? Have a dedicated time when you're going to be ordering. If you can do that once a month, great. If it could be less than that, even better. But just having an established system and process for here's how we do it, here's how we know when we're out of stuff, et cetera. That's just a really easy one. Is this comes back to something we talked about earlier, actually, just intentionality, right? Being intentional. I know we've talked a little bit about how orthodontists maybe didn't have tons of business training traditionally, but you're all incredibly smart people. Like it does not take a degree to figure out something like that, right? Just thinking through a process of like, okay, well, if we're going to be buying this stuff, should we buy it in bulk? Should we not buy it in bulk? Do we know what the price is going to be? Is the price going to change? How do I know what the price is across different vendors? Like there's all of these different questions where in some cases, like we've mentioned before, there's absolutely an orthodontist in a group who has thought this through and has solved for this before, right? And then there's other cases where you've thought it through enough, and then you say, okay, great, I know what I want to expect from a partner. And so that's where some for us with details, where we'll come in and then help you understand, okay, this is the goal that you want, great. We're going to help you get there so you can spend less time. You can focus on patients rather than purchasing. And there's other doctors who are like, actually, I want to focus on this. And so in that case, maybe you want to spend more time on the system and you want to run the system. Either's fine. I think it's just important to decide which one of those you want to be for each of the different categories that we'll talk about.
Yeah.
I think systems are really powerful because they're sustainable. So whether it's a system you build yourself or a system that you outsource to a partner, if you can make the existing opportunities in the practice, if you can more efficiently action those, if you can more efficiently turn those into production, those practices, as the practice grows, the effects are compounding. Because as when we think about new patient flow, for instance, we have it's a very simple process, actually. We have new patient leads that we're generating or new patient interest we're generating. We've got to get those people scheduled. We got to get them to show up and we got to get them to sign a contract. Like for most businesses, like that's about as simple as sales gets for a service business. And if we can maximize our take from the leads being generated by optimizing each portion of that system, we can not only make more money today without spending any more money, but if we decide to spend more money and generate more new patient interest over time, that the efficiency of that system persists. And I personally like going back to what you guys talked about before. I love orthodontics. And even though I'm not an orthodontist, my mom's an orthodontist, and it's one of the best industries in the world to make money in today because the supply of orthodontists is constricted. And so people with a lot of money have not yet figured out really well how to attack that inefficiency. And so I believe that we have a golden period of years over the next 10 years to really maximize the return that we have in the investment in our practice, because people with a ton of money and resources are figuring it out. Some have fallen flat on their face, like Smile Direct Club, but there's obviously a lot of people in pursuit of that. And so I think this is a very timely topic because it's going to be easier now to make money, I believe, than it will be 10 years from now.
So I like what both of you guys are saying. I think for me, the systems are crucial. And I think if you can't make those, I mean, the systems internally to have someone else help you, whether it is partnering with another business or group that's kind of figured some of these things out, whether it is lead generation and follow through or whether it is ordering. I think for my practice, I think a big thing that we've done is we just have good systems in place. And back to empowering good people and having this mindset, which is, it leads into kind of a bonus system. And I don't know if we're going to talk about that separately, but it's empowering people in your practice to care more about stuff than I do. And so when I have a TC that is more focused on our goal, and again, if you're not setting goals, that's a whole nother topic, but on our start goal, she's more focused on that at the end of the month and reporting that and is bonused accordingly on that. Or someone on new patient phone calls, these systems are in place so that things don't fall through the cracks to do that. But if things are falling through the cracks, it's literally you're spending all this money on marketing. It's not happening. But for me, we can dive more into bonuses as it goes, but it's been instrumental in my practice to get people that are more worried on the 29th of the month that we haven't hit a goal or something. And I look at it as marketing dollars, right? So having these bonuses in place allow us to have these people follow these systems that are there that I think many of us have that don't get followed, that we say, no, it's supposed to be happening this way, but it's not. But by incentivizing people to make that happen, it does. So I think I use a combination of both systems and partners. I think that in some aspects, things are better managed in there. You will pay a little bit more to outsource things, but if someone's got a turnkey system that enables you to follow up with patients or order or do things like that, it's well worth its weight in gold. But I think just being aware of like, can I manage those systems internally or have someone who can do it? And if not, I need to get someone on board that can, because a $500 a month fee towards someone or a $1,000 a month fee, if that generates you $50,000 more in production or savings, it's well worth it, right? So I think It's knowing yourself, right? Are you someone who's going to follow through on a system that you got or implement it? And if not, who can I engage that's going to help me do it?
Yeah. I think there are some systems and partners that you're already paying for, you know, I mean, at least the partner part of it. There's people on your team that are looking for other things to focus on. And you can not only tell them, hey, you're going to be in charge of this, but hey, I want you to come up with that system. And so I found that, you know, that type of delegation, which you kind of do that 10-80-10 kind of concept where you initiate the creation of the system by picking that person and casting the vision, and you come back around in the back end to optimize it and to incentivize it or whatever. But they're doing that 80% in the middle whereby it is actually created and instituted, and then they have ownership over it. Yeah. I think those are very big and powerful ideas. And I'll just say this before Brad comes back in, is that I will invest in something, like when I walk around the AAO, I'll invest in something in three categories. One, it makes me more money. Like, it makes me more money than what I spend on it and then some, 3 to 5 times return. I'll invest in it if it saves me money or time, makes me more efficient. Or I'll invest in it if it makes me happy, if it fills my cup. Oh, some things you... Yeah, it's sometimes you do stuff because you enjoy life a little bit more, and there's nothing wrong with any of those. But anyway, I digress. Brad, what did you have?
I was going to say I think back to the systems piece and empowering other people to do it. In my practice, we have a leadership team, right? So there's 4 people on that leadership team that we have, and for me, I'll sit in a room and I always feel like the least important person in there, which at first used to bother me, and now it feels amazing, right? I'll say, hey, we need to be better at doing whatever the topic is, you know, follow through on new patients. And they start chattering away. And I said, at the end of the day, I don't care how they get it done. I'm happy to give them input back to your, you know, 10-80-10 rule. But if they can come up with a system that works and I don't ever have to think about it and it gets the result that I want, absolutely. I want them to do it because I don't know what it truly is like to take a new patient phone call, right? I don't know what it's like to do the ordering. But I'm happy to give you input and with my perspective on things to tell you what it is. But empowering people to put those systems in place, I think, is huge because they're going to be much more likely to stick with them. So
I want to ask this question. Yep. This is Kira Woods who's asking this. Do you compensate your staff when they save you money from an inventory perspective? I'm asking this question. I'm like, well, what if he doesn't? And it's okay if you don't. But how do you measure that incentive if you do?
Yeah. So great question. I think some people do this. I actually don't, right? So one of my leadership people is my lead assistant who does our ordering. She's bonus to be a leader for that role. And she, again, because the culture in our practice is saving money, I know there are some people who that many consultants would say set a supply budget, right? And here's what it is. I take it a different way, which is both in my personal life and in the practice. I want to find the best price for the things that I need and only buy what I need when I need it, right? And so if I've negotiated that price, is like if at the end of the month we've hit our 6% budget because we had to buy brackets and buy something else or whatever the supply budget is, it's like I don't really have a budget. Much like in my personal life, I don't have a budget for, you know, eating out. I don't do it extensively. I don't do it excessively. I go where I want to, when I want to, within the confines of where it is. So I think much in the practice, it's like that, Kyle, where we only buy what we need. We know we're getting the best prices on it. And so it's bonused in a different way, which is, hey, that's your role. You're my key person who's doing that. And it's part of this leadership role that you're in to order. So,
well, can I just give you some credit that it sounds like you are bonusing her for that? I don't know. I mean, if it's her position, she's bonused to be a leader and this is one of her tasks. I mean, you are, you know. So, you know, I think there's different ways to do that. I've heard of some owner orthodontists that will incentivize their associate doctors to kind of lead that charge. And, you know, for us, it's sort of a mix of some of all those different things. But I guess you brought up the idea, too, of a leadership team. That's something that we were put onto by Dino Watt this past year. He did some consulting for us. And not that this is like the world's most, you know, esoteric and hidden idea, but, you know, there's always this idea of like an office manager. We tried that. It maybe didn't work out so well, but we now have a core team where there's an individual from each sort of segment of the team that oversees certain things. And then we also added and implemented different sections of our practice that now every team member can sit on an effective board, as it were. And one of those things is around ordering and inventory and things like that and the efficiency of these things. And so I think that is maybe a good takeaway is that if you're just sort of sitting here like, how do I ever get to having all these systems? Well, for one thing, I use ChatGPT for some of this. I know it sounds ridiculous. I love that system. But I was like, what are some groups that we could have that we could create some leadership around? And I actually had it randomize people based on their preference on what group they would be in. And it like did it all for me. I didn't have to think about hurting someone's feelings. So it's like, blame the AI, blame the robot here. But the point of that is that if there are certain areas in your practice that are weak points, establish that as a system that then your team will fulfill. They've got extra time and ability and strengths, and they can help you with that. Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, they give some nuts and bolts around this, right? To not have people say, well, how do I go about that? So one of the things, Tim Scanlon, who came up with the idea for me that I kind of stole from him, this leadership idea, and it just made complete sense. In my practice, I had tried to do so much myself, right? And you also feel alone, like a silo there sometimes with these systems or where it is. And you say, hey, I want to think about switching bracket systems or practice management systems, right? If you were to drop that in a team meeting with 18 people in the room, you would have a mutiny on your hands about everybody's personal reasons why that shouldn't happen, couldn't. With my leadership team, I can talk to them about, I'm thinking this thought, right? And hash it out and kind of have all these ideas and kind of come up with these ideas and systems before we drop it with the entire team, right? So whether it is, you know, changing the ordering system or whether it is the intake process by having this leadership team. So what we've done in our practice, we identified people. Number one, it goes to them and says, hey, when the lights are being turned out, the four of you are going to be turning out the lights in this place. It gives you some job security. I'm relying on you and counting on you to be on this kind of managerial team, if you will, number one. Two, The hard part is if you give someone $1 an hourly raise for someone for that, say $3, $4 an hour to be on that role, then if they say, I'm not doing the, they're not doing the task, or they don't want to do those tasks, it's hard to take that money away. So what we do is it's a $1,200 quarterly bonus. We actually pay it monthly at $400 to be on that leadership team. So if someone either isn't performing those duties or doesn't want to, we can easily step back and say, great, you're an assistant again. You're going to make what you were making before. We're going to take that part off. So it doesn't feel like a demotion or then a renegotiation of, wait, we're going to now drop your pay $4 an hour again, right? It also incentivizes them that to not be there, not working, right? That the $400, it behooves them to work less hours, right? That they're not trying to milk the clock, trying to do it. So if they're on your leadership team, they're like, hey, I'm going to get $400 whether I work on Monday or I don't work on Monday when doctor's not here, right? So it really shifts that to more of this managerial role that they feel like they're in the know before everybody else. And it's also like, hey, you've got to be respectful of that position. If you're not being respectful of it, then you're not going to be on this role, this leadership team. And so I think what it's done for me is it's really taken a lot of this micromanagement and me feeling like I've got to do everything and people in each of these zones to be able to take it. Like you said, have more smaller roles and smaller teams and things that they can then bring two or three people together who want to be on marketing or want to be on, you know, the new patient process or, hey, the new PMS, you know, research team. Like almost a subcommittee, if you will. So it's been a huge change for me in the last probably 3-4 years in my practice. So
I think a big shift for us to echo what you're saying, and then we'll shift on to the next question, is trusting that your team both cares about the practice. I won't say it's as much or more or what, but they care about the practice and they care about these things. That is a big mind shift, and that they're capable of fixing these issues and finding solutions just as well, if not better, than you are. There may be some that disagree with that, and that's fine. It's just at the certain size of a practice, you cannot be doing all of it. And it's also not good leadership to insist on having your thumb on everything that happens in your practice. And I've just found that by freeing myself up by delegation and by systematizing the implementation of these systems, that's a mouthful, that it gets done much better. Now, here's a different perspective, and then we'll shift on just for what it's worth. I think an orthodontist here says, with the difficulties we've been having with hiring, there's a huge benefit to our practice having been able to just keep our highly paid veteran staff in the chair and not carrying out secondary roles. I think that's going to be practice and orthodontist and business owner specific. I would say that what I have found is that the more that my team is around, and we try to squeeze the day and only see patients as few number of days a week as we have to. So that does leave some non-doctor days. And as you sort of alluded to, Brad, there's some people that want to be in the office every minute that it's open, and that can be a problem. And there's some that only want to be there when they absolutely have to be. But I have just found that there is always excess time, no matter how busy you are or how understaffed you are, for people to do other tasks or duties. And some want all the more, and they can be rewarded for that. So I would just challenge, I'm not challenging this specific user, and I appreciate that comment, because if they're a veteran team member and they're best served at doing, you know, their core tasks, great, have them doing that. This should not stand in the way of that. If they have extra time, there's no reason why they shouldn't be doing some other things, would be my thought. And that actually they may find more enjoyment in that differentiation of tasks and not just being a clinical assistant, let's say. And some want to just be a clinical assistant. I will say that in some practices, the culture has been around for so long, we don't do other outside stuff. I could see that being an issue too. And so I think it is about leading people along and saying, well, this is the new expectation. Here's why it benefits you. This is why we're going to do it. We're going to try it for a while. If we hate it or we need to switch it up, we will. I know I'm spitting a lot. Sorry. Not literally, just, you know, figuratively. So let's shift on, because we need to keep moving here. We're going to get in the nitty gritty, gentlemen. We're going to talk about bringing more money in. We're going to drill down. We're going to get practical. We're going to start listing this stuff out. And then we're going to make our top five. And I do want people, as we get into this, start sharing your ideas, and I'll put them up on the screen, and we'll build this list together, okay? And so, again, you're either going to make more money, bring more in, send less out, but let's start with the former there, which is, what are the best ways for orthodontists to bring more money in? And let's just start talking about some.
I can start here. So our practice, when I started managing it, it had been flat for about 10 years. So it was a mature practice, great practice. But we tripled the size of it on a 1% marketing budget. And one of the things that we did, kind of focusing on the existing opportunities, like what were the resources we already had access to? One of the things we thought about was the phone. Like, how much is each phone call worth coming into the practice? And, you know, each phone call is worth $200 to $300, depending on the practice. And so literally one of the things we did was as simple as answer our phone. And best estimate, just with the data we have, the average practice misses out on about $500,000 of production every year by just not answering their phone. So I will start there, and I will gun for that one to be among the top five because it is one of the easiest and most effective ways to make more money.
Yeah. All right. What are some other ways to bring more money in? That's good. Not all at once.
Yeah. I think that, you know, bringing more money in is not being afraid to spend on marketing, right? Like, I mean, I know Google AdWords have been helpful for us. I think it's also still tried and true forming relationships. And I know it's a slow burn and it's easy to say, but the general dentist and the pediatric dentist is still a good referral source, and being friends with those people and making sure you're taking care of their patients and forming, for lack of a better, just better relationships with those people. I think it's going to pay for itself tenfold on that. And there's some people who are very gifted at that, and people who aren't great, getting your team involved, whether it is with other dentists. And then lastly, I think keeping those patients that you've got. I know Scott talks a lot about this, which is the follow through, that the new patient does show up right after they've scheduled, and that if they don't sign up that day, you know, we incentivize same day starts. And but if they don't sign up the same day, that there is that follow through. And I know many people either don't have a TC or a system in place to do that follow up. But to me, it's that TC that 3 months or 6 months down the road that signs up that person that they've been working on, you know, with emails and follow up is a way better high five to me with her than the person who signed up the same day, because it's like, dang, you really earned your keep by following up on that patient, sticking with it, and the email thread and the chains. And so I think it's keeping those people that you've got coming through the door as well. So trying to get more in the door through, again, Google Ads have been very successful for us and helpful, through also, like I said, relationship building with doctors. And then lastly, keeping the people that come in the door and following up when they don't sign up day of.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
I think to that, one of the first things that we did is we took an inventory of all of the resources that we had access to grow the practice that cost no money. One of the things, again, being this was a more mature practice, we had hundreds of patients that had come in for a consult, did not have a future appointment scheduled, and or were in some kind of observation or recall status that they were just floating. And that is one way that you can seem like an absolute practice growth genius, is to literally just pull the report of people that don't have future appointments scheduled that should, and give them a call, send them a text. Like, you don't need anything special to do that. And you can add a few hundred thousand dollars of production just by putting in a few days worth of effort trying to reach out to those folks.
Kyle, listen, I kind of slipped my mind a little bit that it falls under this category. One big thing I'd recommend to people is reevaluate your fees and make them as high as you can in your area to be competitive, right? And the second thing is, I think we often include things. So a big change that we made a few years back was charging extra for an expander, right? It wasn't just wrapped into a fee, right? So the other thing is, I know some people charge extra for lingual bonded retainers, right? Because it is a lot of people have gone away, I'm not going to do them. And if in your neighborhood there's nobody else doing lingual bonded retainers, that is definitely something that you could charge more for, because it's a unique service that you provide. I think as orthodontists, we've wrapped things into our fee. It's always been the comprehensive fee. For us, when we're doing the bone work on a patient and we need to use an expander, it's not just a bump up in a level, for example. It's actually, there's an upcharge for the expander that's there, right? Because of the extra time, the cost of the expander itself, the work that we're going to do, and the value that we're going to create for someone. The other one is a retainer program, right? That was a huge for us. When we added that, it was an immediate 10% boost that we're selling our retainer program at literally 97%. I remember once I was in one of these leadership meetings and I said to my TC, I said, you know what we should do is we should throw a cute little party for the people who've signed up for our retainer program. We should do a wine and cheese party and let them know how much we love them. And she just looks, kind of moves her eyes side to side. She goes, we sell it like 98%, that's going to be a pretty big party if we invite everybody, right? And so
I feel bad for the 3%, you know.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, we should throw a party for them to get them to sign up. But
yeah, right.
That has been huge. Now, a couple of other things, revenue streams back to the people that you've got there and maybe that didn't sign up, but also the people that are there. So other things that are value adds that we have never historically charged for. One, as many people know me, I put that video out about credit card processing rate. So we now charge, except for the initial swipe, because we want to encourage big down payments, we do charge a credit card fee. If they want to put their monthly charges on a credit card, we have an additional fee for that. If they put zero down, we have an additional fee for that. If they want to go beyond 6 months after treatment time, they get an additional fee for that, right? So those are things that while we're extremely flexible in financing, in terms of bringing in more money, I think be as flexible as you feel comfortable with. People pay their bills, right? Number one. And number two, to charge extra for these things that cost you money that we've always just included in our practices, right? And you might not feel comfortable doing that, but I will tell you, no one has balked when we said, hey, you want the zero down option? There's a small percentage on top of your fee to do that. What it's enabled us to do is to keep our base fee about where it was for the last 10 years, right? Our base fee hasn't drastically changed. But with these ads, it's allowed our average case fee to go up drastically between retainer programs, between adding on for expanders, between adding on financing charges, right? So, and I think it's just, again, back to being aware of it and stopping back and saying, like, are we just doing what we've always done? Or what are other businesses doing? Or what are other, you know, every time I go to a restaurant, I get a 3% charge to do my credit card, right? Like it's almost ubiquitous now.
Yeah. So yeah, and they're fees that people won't necessarily object to. And
yeah, so I think we're so reluctant to raise fees. We're so reluctant to tack on these other things. And I think in doing that you will see that you can easily increase your average case fee hundreds, if not over $1,000 per case. And again, it goes back to how many cases do I need to see to get the production, right? Which is a huge difference because it's 100% profitability on that case because you haven't changed any of your fixed costs. You haven't changed any of your overhead costs to increase those fees to do that. So I can't put that on. Again, if we're going to petition for top fives, I'm petitioning for that one, which is raising assess what you're not charging for that you could be charging for.
Yeah. Right on, Nick. Bring us home on this one real quick, Nick. He's been left out of this one. I want to include Nick in this.
Well, that's all right. All my years of experience in marketing stuff was outside of the orthodontic world, so I'm loving hearing this stuff. But what it comes back to is something we talked about earlier, which is getting the team all rallied around the same thing. So if there's ways to incentivize people towards specific goals related to whether it's Google, like, you know, Google reviews or even just following up with leads who had already come through. If the team's all aligned on the same thing, then all of those individual tactics or systems that, you know, that you're deploying, you'll be able to trust that they're happening rather than worrying about it. So I think any way to incentivize people towards those tactics will make the tactics work 10 times better.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, finding the key areas of your practice that will make you more profitable and that it's sort of what Brad's getting at is that if you go through this process and it's always ABC, 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 what are the other letters you can add into that such that you still do the core, you know, how would I say that? The core thing that needs to happen, which is patient shows up, you take records, you come up with a treatment plan, you treat them out, you take the braces off, you give them retainers, like those things that have to happen. Where are the spots for increased value? I think one of the things that got mentioned was, you know, even just something as simple as asking, you know, are there any other family members that need to be seen? You know, a question like that mm-hmm. that comes in on the new patient call. I mean, I call this like it's the category of the low hanging fruit. There are the things that there's literally fruit there. Or there's this, someone mentioned this to me a few weeks back, the diamonds in your backyard concept. There's like a fable about, you know, there's so many diamonds just buried in your backyard and you just got to go in there and dig them up, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think in the backyard of the orthodontic practice are so many diamonds and there's so much low hanging mm-hmm. fruit. So I think like first start with establishing, okay, what are those things that we can add into this ABC to make it more lucrative and more profitable? And to be fair, like the Kodak study is like a sort of driving principle for me, which is to say that Kodak studied on how much they needed to charge for their film. And, you know, look it up if you're not familiar with it. But basically, if you charge just 10% more, I think you have to do like 40% less overall business or something. So like mm-hmm. what we charge is like massively important to really, like, not to sound lazy, but how little we actually have to work, you know? So work smarter, not harder, I would say. And so I think those are good. Let's, if it's okay with you, because we're going to come back around and do the top five and we'll insert some other things here too. Let's shift into to sending less money out. And so I would think that the more obvious thing when we're thinking about making more money is I'm going to make more money. But I think, you know, as interesting and maybe more interesting is how do you send less money out? How do you keep more of that money? You could say it's another kind of related one. How do you optimize your practice and expenses? So I don't know who wants to go first, but what are the best ways for orthodontists to send less money out?
Brad, you want to kick us off?
I'm happy to. This is one that's near and dear to my heart. I love it. I think, you know, it goes back to that mindset of being aware of what you're paying for things. And I joke that there's a calculator in my head whenever, you know, I say I need five more aligners for something. Well, okay, this is the cost per aligner. That's going to be this. Gosh, a spring aligner might be cheaper to do that instead, right? And so I think being acutely aware of what you're spending for things is going to just make you, you know, more in tune with it, which is going to make you save that money instantly. I think a big thing, you know, Kyle, you talked about the low-hanging fruit. I think same thing here, savings money. I think there's a couple of ways that there's not a much of an emotional cost. I look at the emotional cost tied to it as well as the true dollar cost. That switching, you know, your bracket system has a huge emotional cost that comes for it, you know, with it to your staff, to you, not knowing the nuances of it, all of these things. And I think another big one would be starting an in-house 3D lab, right? We all think it's going to save us money or create some value. But it's a huge emotional cost in the way you do your business, right? And there's other things I think that are big ones that are easy. And I think being aware and open to things that you think either aren't negotiable that could be, right? Number one, could you negotiate your lease with your landlord that you haven't looked at in a while, or you thought it's just fixed because you've been on it, right? Another one would be your interest rate on the loan that you've got. We successfully negotiated ours during COVID on two different loans that saved us thousands of dollars, right? By just talking to our bank and saying, would you be willing to do XYZ? And I think same thing too, whether it's with your bracket manufacturer, if you're loyal to a brand that you've got, going to your rep and saying, I'm going to be loyal to you and I'm going to do this, but negotiating that best price, which perhaps you thought wasn't negotiable any better than where you were. I think by focusing on some of these things, it as well. So I've told people, I said, I don't think I'm paying any more for anything in my practice except staff or rent than I did 10 years ago, right? And that is just by being diligent and vigilant on these things. So for a great example is I also want there to not be a detraction of patient care. So I want there to patient not to notice that any of you guys walked into my practice, you wouldn't see where we're saving these costs, right? Whether it's through Archwire cost savings that we're getting, you know, Archwires with two crimp stops on them that work amazing for 50 cents a piece instead of $4, $5, $10 a piece, right? Another big
I think
one.
That's a really, I want to say really quickly, that's a very big one. And I think that will be an important one to come back to this idea of being frugal does not mean you're cheap. I 100%. Think that's very important. I think that if you're buying a 1 cent bracket that maybe isn't going to stay on the tooth and isn't going to, you know, have the right torques and things like that's idiotic. Like, that's not what we're talking about.
100%. Yeah. It's value, right? And I think that there's products out there that we've been sold. And I think we talked as a group before this, which is because orthodontists just gravitate towards something, we just use it. And there could be a cheaper alternative that's not got the word orthodontic in front of it, right? That's sold in the industries outside of us, number one. And two, I think it's just other things that come to mind that it's just easy, which there is some convenience in, for example, buying a certain brand of printer, a 3D printer, because all your friends use it and you know that there's going to be support for it. So it feels easier to dip your toes in, but yet the resin is then a certain cost that you can't get alternative resins and you're locked into this ecosystem. And it might be great because it's convenient, but you're going to pay a cost for that convenience, right? So for me in the game, which is, hey, I've got a different printer that I can use, you know, open source resins with, I'm going to, you know, my cost per print is going to be much less than someone who said, hey, I'm just using what everybody else is using. Right. And I think Nick and I talked about that a lot.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Nick.
Sure. Yeah. I was just going to say, this is one of the things coming into ortho world the last 4 years or so has been surprising to me is that there's this mentality that you can't negotiate. Like some doctors absolutely do. Others just don't want to deal with the hassle of it. But one of the things that I think I just encourage is that everything is negotiable. We at Details see tens of millions of dollars a year in orders processing through, which means, can you just imagine the number of prices that change that are maybe supposedly, you know, the best price that shift multiple times in a single year within single suppliers? The pricing in this industry changes so dramatically, even like for practices across, like down the street from each other. And so this is absolutely an area that I think this is one of those diamond areas maybe that is in the backyard where it's likely that you're overpaying. And sometimes that's okay to get to the emotional costs that, that Brad talked about. Some of this is like, it's okay to hand off to a partner and say, okay, we know we might be overpaying on this, or maybe clinically you just prefer a certain product and you're actually fine with the price where it's at. But in general, if this is an area, if saving money is important to you, then I can tell you everything's negotiable. And I think Brad's got some good experience in doing so.
Yeah, I think just real quickly, so for me, that was a big eye opener when the Facebook group started. They started about 6 months after I got into practice. And, you know, at that point, before that, like you had no idea what other people were paying, except that, you know, you may talk in a meeting or something. But I remember people in a group that I was in really early on be like, what are you paying for X, you know, bracket or whatever. And it was like, it was crazy how different sure. those prices were. And then was able to sign up for Mary's List, still on that, and able to see like a little bit more of like, okay, like group negotiated pricing. And of course there's buying groups, and that there's details also that, that shows some of those details. And, you know, there's all these different options now where you really don't have an excuse for spending the crazy amounts that, let's just say, some of the big box dental provider groups may would charge you for. And then there's also a conversation around like gray market stuff that, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm getting this bracket and it's so cheap. It's like, well, do you know what's in the bracket? You know, so there's all those kind of considerations too. So keep it above, you know, the board, as it were. And then Brad, go ahead and kind of continue on with that.
So what I was going to say there was a couple of things. One is this isn't about finding the cheapest product. It's finding what you want and what you really like to use. I mean, I think if you like the way the iPhone feels and fits in your hand, you're going to always buy that iPhone, but getting it on sale or getting it on the best price, it makes sense, right? So I think for me, it's about finding what works for you, the best value of braces that stay on the teeth and wires that don't kink and break, glues that work so they're not falling off. But once you negotiate it, you're comfortable with that and you know that I'm going to use this product, but I've got the best price and I'm not then constantly revisiting it, right? You're not thinking about switching your bracket because I'm just this bracket guy or wherever it is. So I think that's the point I wanted to make, which is it's not about finding the cheapest or off market or gray market stuff, but rather about finding things that you like the best and negotiating the best price or finding the best price on that. The other part on all this is if there's a middleman in something, I think oftentimes there's certain companies that are repackaging brackets that are either gray market or are coming from other countries, right? That they're being made somewhere else, but we feel more secure that they're being sold to us by an American company. Right. And so if you're buying C-Chain from certain companies out there, it's not being made in the USA. It's being made from somewhere else, but they just have a constant supplier. So I guess with that, then the question becomes is, do you want to just take the middleman out and buy it yourself? Right. I think a key one for me is retainer cases. That's one on Alibaba that I'll go buy because my patients don't care where I bought my retainer case. Right. So if I'm going to buy 1,000 retainer cases and I can get them for 80 cents, I shouldn't go spend $4 or $5 on that exact same retainer case. With that comes a lot of work, right? I've got to find the right vendor. I've got to find the person to do it. I've got to hope it comes and, you know, all of those things. So there's some work that goes into that. So I think what both Nick and Scott are talking about in the partnership piece, which is if you find someone, there's this convenience factor that comes into having someone else do it, but you're going to pay more for that. Now, if you like it, you want to do it. For me, a lot of my marketing stuff comes from Alibaba, right? Because I can go find, you know, whether it's the Stanley Cup or whether it's the Silly Pint, you know, not Silly Pint cup or whether it, you know, whatever, a retainer case or things like that, that are giveaways to my patients that aren't affecting their patient care in the least. One big one for me as in doing some of these things, it's actually been a little bit less stressful. So a huge one for me was handpieces. I remember when I first went into practice, a nice handpiece cost you $1,200, right? And we treated that thing like gold. At the end of the day, they were counted. We had two assistants double check each other's count. Oh, yep, there is one in the sterilizer. And the sad day when the assistants are all there with their tail between their legs that they accidentally threw away a handpiece the night before and they can't find it, right? There are $12 handpieces out there that work just as great. They don't chatter. They spin well. They last for several years. And I'm not stressed at the end of the day whether we lost a handpiece or not, right? So that for me is an example of, hey, saving money has actually been less of a stressor than kind of having this one near and dear to my heart, you know, Cavo handpiece that I can't, you know, lose place of because it's the only one we've got or whatever that is. So,
and now when the handpieces break, I just take it and I throw it in the trash and I say, Kobe, and then I make it, you know, it's,
right.
It's the best thing. Scott, what do you have on this one? What are some things you got? And then we'll move on to our top five.
Yeah. I think my perspective, it's probably informed by just the experience I've had with the different businesses. I think saving money is important. And running an efficient business is important, but especially in orthodontics, we should think about the time that we spend doing those things. Like, there are obviously dramatic examples, like $1,200 handpieces to $12 handpieces. You can spend a lot of time pinching pennies and missing out on opportunities to grow. And so I think one of the most important things that Brad said was, once you have figured it out or someone else has figured it out, like, forget about it and start thinking about other things that make a bigger impact. So that's the main, I don't have a whole lot to contribute here. Like, we were always like conscientious of the costs, but it was never a huge focus for us. We were thinking about how do we grow the business, because top line does solve a lot of things. It makes the percentages a lot better.
Go ahead, Brad.
I was gonna chime in, Scott. So back to this set it and forget it. With that, I would say, you know, one of my top five that we didn't talk about yet would be review stuff at least annually, right? Like the stuff that you're spending, right? Like, what are your bracket costs? What are your, you know, your credit card processing rates? What are you paying in banking fees? And just to be aware of that, and whether that's a set time yearly. A big one for us is internet, right? Like, every year in October, we call Comcast and say, can we get the same speed for a lower price, or can we get a faster speed for the same price, right? It's just set as a to-do for our practice to look at those things, because otherwise they're going to keep you on the same one you've got. It's a cell phone plan that you've had for 10 years that you could be getting twice as much for half the price, right? So I think absolutely back to the set it and forget it, which is, hey, I've got a system in place. So now I don't have to rethink about how to do that, but I'm still going to be revisiting it and checking in on it, whether it's overhead or whether it's our new patient process or things like that.
And I think it's important to actually make a determination of who does that work. Because if the doctor is doing that work, they're not making the most efficient use of their time. If they go to one lunch and learn, as opposed to call three vendors, you know, internet or whatever that anybody could do, like one lunch and learn with one professional referral source could net $100,000 over the next 2 or 3 years.
Absolutely. Totally agree. And I think that's back to, we didn't throw this term in there yet, but is the juice worth the squeeze, right? And especially if it's doctor time, it's often not. And I think coming back to 3D printing, I tell people who are getting into it, I said, you are going to become the lowest paid person in your practice that knows how to do this when you implement it, right? And so I don't want to be the lowest paid person in my practice doing something, right? I want to be able to delegate that. But with some of these things, yes, we might need to put the 10% in on the front end, but I don't want to be the person who's like being called, hey, the printer's not working, or the, could you call this vendor? You seem to know the person over there. Could you ask them about our pricing on something, right? So I think you're absolutely right, is finding other people who can take this burden off our plate so it doesn't become ours, but it is a focus in the practice. And I think you can still get it done without it increasing your stress level or increasing your time in the practice or any of that stuff, but through these systems or these partnerships that we've talked about.
I'll add this one final thing and then we'll shift on to the top five. I'm going to call this the gold rush risk, or maybe it's the risk of FOMO savings. That could be another term for this. I'm just making this up on the spot. But I think in this era of group discounts, which have actually become less of a thing, I think probably 5 years ago, that was like the high water mark of, hey, we're going to do a scanner order. Who wants in? You know, that kind of stuff. And I got in on one of those for changing my practice management software. And 2 days into the training, I said, I can't do this. It wasn't what I expected that it would be. And so what good is the savings of the money if it disrupts your practice or it doesn't go through? And so I think that would like be a big thing, which we've already sort of called out. But I think not getting caught up in a wave that carries you to save on something that you really just would be better off not changing. And so is the juice worth the squeeze, as Brad so eloquently put? We have so many good comments, but I also don't want to go so overtime. So I think, Brad, as I'm bringing up the top five, it seemed like you had something else you wanted to say. So go ahead and do that, and then we'll go to the top five.
I think simply back to that, is that this emotional cost that's there, right? And we always say in our practice, so we're looking at switching practice management softwares for a host of reasons. And it's my leadership team that came to me and said, hey, we're having some issues with our practice management, right? So to me, I said, hey, I want you guys to know I'm not driving this bus, but I'm on your bus, right? You tell me where we're headed and where we're going, and I'll give you my feedback and my input, right? And so I think on that, the key thing is this, it's easy to throw chaos into your practice with quick changes and quick movements. So one of the things that we've implemented, I call it the test kitchen, because I was guilty of this, which is we're switching brackets, we're switching wires, we're switching O-ties, we're switching you name it, because we're going to save some money because someone said we could. With that being said, it's now we're able to joke about it in the practice, which is, again, this idea of a test kitchen, where in a kitchen, you know, if you're going to change your vendor for your meat products, you're going to do it slowly or just try it before you go live with it. So in our practice, if we're going to switch anything, especially in the clinic, we're going to try five of them. We might try five bracket sets with one assistant that's going to be the person who's going to put them on so we can really kind of guide that process. Same thing with if it's a new type of adhesive, for example. We're not going to know the downside of that maybe for 6 or 12 months. So we might bracket 10 patients with that, track them, and make sure the brackets weren't falling off 12 months into this, right? Because it might take some time to figure that out. And so this notion of don't whiplash your team, right? Like literally getting other people on board to help you make these decisions, asking yourself, are we doing it because it's going to be better for our patients or better for our practice, number one. Number two, if it's not, is it going to be a significant cost savings with an equal trade-off to what we're currently using, right? And lastly, it's just going to be such a huge savings that it's worth, you know, switching because we're going to just save so much money where it's worth the hassle of doing that. Right. But asking those questions and not just switching because, it's going to save us a dollar per whatever, but you might only use five of those a month. So you're saving a tiny amount of money for a lot of headache and hassle.
All right. So the time has come. All great thoughts, all good stuff. It's come. Let's put up or shut up, you know, let's get some stuff on this board. So you can see these are a lot of things that were offered up by this group in the pre-interview, but here are just some ideas. Some of these were mentioned: sell more retainer plans, whitening, create better incentives and incentivize around the things that, you know, produce more for you. Google reviews, raising your fees, maximizing ROI on fixed costs, better lead management, reducing product spend, optimizing unscheduled opportunities, tracking the entire new patient journey, same day starts, becoming more tax efficient, relentlessly pursuing cost savings, reviewing pricing costs annually, bonusing team members, flexible financing, offering that, of course, and then maximizing your marketing and creating a good system around that. There's a lot of options here. I think probably what will be helpful on some level is to kind of group some of these together. I don't know. Of these, what are the ones you think for sure that need to be on this list? Just call out ones, and then we'll either say that we agree with you or we don't. And I would love to see some people in the comments say what they think should be on there.
I'll just start with, like, if you're not managing leads well, then nothing's going to happen. Like, if there's not any initial money coming in the door, so I don't know where exactly I would put it, but it's managing leads well. Feels like something Scott in particular has good insights on. I don't know if on the marketing stack, Scott, you put that at the top of the marketing items, or if you'd put something else. But to me, if you know, obviously with what we're doing, we're saving practices money on
Nick, supplies, I think that's high up there. I think being intentional about making more money, whether that's both the top lines, I think it's just this mindset and the practice of saying, hey, we're going to focus on this, right? I think this intentionality it is going to drive a lot of these beneath it, right? That for me, I think is, you know, making it a culture, you know, a part of your sure. culture. And I think absolutely then leads follow right in there, you know, but.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it relates to both the new patient journey and unscheduled opportunities. If you miss a call, they're obviously unscheduled. And to put it in perspective, like we're talking about making more money or saving money, and four phone calls are worth $1,000. So it's like, answer the phone. And the first step is to pull a report out of the phone system and see how many missed or abandoned calls that you have and track it. There are practices that have with in-house teams, 98% answer rates. And it probably would not surprise you that those are among the fastest growing practices in the country.
Scott, and I would think that, you know, exactly. I mean, when we became intentional about that, right? I mean, I think that was the mind shift change, right? And we bonus it too, right? Which is those answering the phones and getting the new patient calls, you know, kind of scheduled as part of that. So
we have some really great thoughts. I'll just read a few of them. We have, and none of them have names associated, so I'll just read them. There's no reason to put it up on the screen. Well, I can. Review pricing costs annually. We have same day starts, which is definitely, I think, a part of one of these for sure. Becoming more efficient clinically with excellent results. Yeah, increases capacity and gives you more revenue per appointment. I think that's good. And then this one, money is the oxygen of business, lead management. I think that, again, I'm the market, not the marketing, but I'm a marketing person for sure and understand it well. And orthodontics is weird because every 2 years you need a whole new, you know, slew of patients. So, and again, I love orthodontics, great business, but that does make marketing really important. But if there's an enormous hole in your bucket between creating the lead, you know, spending all the money on the marketing, but not actually scheduling them in an efficient way, and then not fostering them throughout that new patient process, and then ultimately not closing them, and then also not following up on them later, I don't know if that becomes all one big like concept. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like the the lifeline or the new patient or something. I mean, it's all that's kind of connected. So that's one of them. So I like the idea of one that you guys said, which was optimizing unscheduled opportunities. I don't know who that was that suggested that one, but I see that as a big thing. I'd almost call that like the low hanging fruit in some ways. Mm-hmm. But that to me, that's like, okay, we are here to do business. How much more can we do in this given time? What can we squeeze into this day without killing people? You know, same day starts, same day debonds, same day consults. And also maybe it's related is working your growth guidance pool. Like if something falls off, you got all these people floating around in this pond that a lot of them are ready to start. And we don't have the systems around getting them back in. And then also like when people, you know, they don't start. And as you sort of said, the big high five for Brad is like, you spent 3 months texting an email on this person and they finally decided to come in. That's awesome. And that's fruit. I mean, it may not be low hanging, but it's fruit on the tree. Like, it's still good fruit, you know? So I don't know what we call that, but that's almost, I'm going to call it optimize unscheduled opportunities. That's a mouthful, but
I think it's the easiest low hanging fruit. And like you can buy fancy, cool automation systems like ours, or you can literally pull a report and someone who wants extra hours say, hey, here's the 300 people we need to call. I'll give you $10 for every scheduled appointment. And you would be very surprised, even someone who doesn't like being on the phone, how many appointments get booked. Like it does not have to be a sophisticated system. It does not have to be like over-engineered.
Yeah.
That's a better way of saying that. Maybe it's like filling your day or like, you know, making the most of the time you're there. I don't know. So maybe we can improve upon, maybe someone has an idea of how to improve upon that name. Let's see some others real quick. And then Nick, I'll go to you.
We have
raising fees. Yeah. Case fees have not kept pace with inflation. I agree. Raise fees. Make sure your TCs are efficient in sales techniques. Those are the only other ones we have. So
real quick on the raise fees and your TC. I say the raise fees and your TC. I'm guilty of my TC sits in that room with that person before I go in. They know their personality. They know if they're that super meticulous type person or whatever. And I'll come in. I'm like, well, there's a level one case. I kind of let my TC tell me which direction we go. Cause I think as orthodontists, we always say, oh, this is pretty easy, right? Like let's make it this level. It's like, oh my gosh, now this person is going to be a handful for you. I think trusting your TC's guidance as well on what fee level that should be and empowering them to have that dialogue with you. It's like, hey, I'm thinking this is a level one or level two. He's like, oh my gosh, that kid's been bouncing off the walls in there, right? He's, you know, he's going to give us a run for our money here. I think trusting those TCs to give that fee and incentivizing them to also, to not just always just give the lowest fee, right? So.
Well, okay, there's one. You said a magic word, incentives. One's kind of been brought up. I'm a big fan of incentives. I don't know if that deserves a spot on the top five, but
I think it's worthy of being on a top five. I don't know if it's it might be this one. Charlie Munger said, show me the incentives and I'll show you the outcome.
100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's so true. Goes hand in hand with what I was just going to say, which is that, you know, your staff, and this goes with the optimizing the day that we just talked about as well, which is that your staff, you can incentivize staff to do whatever you want them to do. The number of practices, just some data, 95% of our customers, it's a clinical staff member that's doing the ordering of supplies. So you have someone that could spend an hour with a new patient, $6,000, or an hour talking to sales reps, or an hour trying to save 40 cents on something, or an hour comparing two vendors. Free them up. I would much rather, we tell our clients this all the time, like, talk to Scott, like, maybe you guys should be doing marketing. Like, if you do have excess capacity, like in the day, there's lead gen, there's lead management, there's other stuff that staff person could be doing. That's way better time than spending it on ordering. And so whether that's, you know, seeing new patients, managing leads, working on marketing, I don't know if that's maybe maximize ROI and fixed costs. I don't know where exactly it fits, but just optimizing the staff time, it feels valuable, which you can do with incentives.
Yeah. And maybe instead of incentivize your team, because that's kind of like obvious, it should be like incentivize profitable activities or something.
Sure,
like
yeah.
That. I mean, I think it's like, what are the things in your practice that we talked about? I keep saying low hanging fruit. I apologize to anyone out there that doesn't like fruit. But like, you know, incentivizing the things that directly grow the practice, referrals, you know, creation of new referral sources, or asking a patient that's in your office already, is there anyone else you know that you could recommend us to, or anyone else in your family? Or like, you know, internal marketing is the cheapest marketing that exists, and it's probably the best because you're going to get a fully formed and ready to start patient when they show up, right? Moms that are there, like, and they ask you about their teeth. One thing that kills me on the inside is like, oh, well, we can get you scheduled for consult. Do it right then. Like, offer go through the fee right then. Like, I think that kind of, it fits into that optimizing unscheduled opportunities. It wasn't scheduled to have that conversation, but why not have it? And then why not like scan her right then, you know? But on the incentives, I would say things like, yeah, incentivizing Google reviews, which we mentioned, I think those are valuable. Incentivizing same day starts, incentivizing retainer plans and the sale of those, or retainer programs, whatever you want to call it. I think that makes more sure that these things actually happen consistently. And then you're sharing in the fruits of that. So I like that one. I hope you do. And then we have two more that we need. I'm leaving number one open. It may be that one that we already have becomes number one, but
I think, you know, for a big one here would be review and negotiate fees at least annually, right? Like, I think just this right on here. So far, we don't have anything that's really kind of cost savings up on this board.
That's
right?
What I'm saving for one, I think.
Yeah. Well, and I think you know, that mindset of this cost savings. But I think reviewing it, one thing that I didn't put in there is that there's a lot of expensive things that we spend our money on. And I think aligner costs is one of them. And you could either put that in the, gosh, I make a ton of money selling a lot of aligners costs, but, and also I think a lot of these customized bracket systems, right? That, not to confuse us, but that is a huge overhead cost expense that if you're doing, let's say 300 starts a year on a customized bracket system, that's $300,000. That stopping to question, is my efficiency that much better to really what I could have paid an associate to be in here to do that? And that's not to knock those systems or people who believe in them, but just asking yourself, could I be more efficient myself? Or is there a way, because there's lots of people out there without customized brackets that are getting amazing results, right? So, and then the other one is if you're not a top brand of a certain aligner producer, revisiting some of these other options, because I think that there's been some catch up in negotiating those fees, where if you were paying top dollar for a certain brand of aligners, negotiating your fee with one of these alternative ones could save you drastically thousands and thousands of dollars a month, right? Where instead of saving 10 cents on your gauze, that if you're saving $1,000 per aligner case or per, you know, that. So I think that just falls into critically thinking about your cost and reviewing them regularly.
Yeah. This I'd kind of thought about in advance on trying to bring some of these together. But for me, I think it's number one, I think, is just this mindset of saving money where it makes sense.
And I think it's that mindset word, Kyle, like even above the word operational efficiency, I think that whether it's a health change in your life, or whether it's this mindset piece that really is going to drive that you're going to now look at all of these things critically and get your team members to do the same, right? It's just, I think it needs to become kind of a passion in there, and saying like, for every minute or dollar that I invest in this cost savings, I'm going to reap this benefit for years to come, right? That by this one or this one thing, it's going to allow me to enjoy those benefits for years, right? If you are now getting, if your leads now, you're keeping 10 more people a month that you weren't before because of a new system that you got in place, that's forever, right? For the energy that you put into it, or whether it's, we've now implemented a system of cost savings that just happens now, it's turnkey. I think that this just has to be, I think that has to be number one for me, this mindset of just like, the rest will trickle down and you'll be super interested and involved in these other things.
Yeah, I like that. All right. And then we're going to need a number five. So we see it there. What is missing from this list? And then we can reorder them if we need to.
Raising your fees. That's exactly what I was going to say, Nick. Raising your fees and charging accordingly for the value you provide. Raising your fees and finding other ways to, whether it's through additional fees, whether it's laser procedures, whether it's whitening programs, whether it's LTR, whether it's charging for RPEs. I think it's finding value in those patients that are there and services that you can provide, because how many of us have had to say like, oh my God, I can't wait to get my teeth whitened now. I'm going to go to my dentist and do that. Right. and you're like, well, we've got a whitening program. You know what I mean? I think there's ways to do that. And in those raise your fees, if you don't have a retainer program, or you're not charging for, credit card charges, and you're not charging for extended financing, you're not charging for some of these other things, to look at those places, if it feels comfortable to you in your practice, to charge for those additional things that you're giving patients, that truly add value to their experience.
To me, the lowest hanging fruit is retainer plan. And I still talk to doctors all the time that don't do it. And that's just amazing to me. So like raising your fees, like there's retainers, there's whitening, there's the other charges that you were talking about, Brad, but like that retainer plan is like the easiest add-on that has the largest effect that you could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you know what else, Scott, that it's done for me is that we used to just, give these things away, and now my team sees it the same way. Well, it's not fair that someone's in the retainer program that we're giving a free retainer to this person who's not in the program. And I think as orthodontists, we want to give stuff away. And don't get me wrong, we warranty our, program people who aren't even in the program. But if someone's sitting next to someone who's in the program, it feels easier to say to someone, no, that's just a full price retainer fee because you're not in the program, versus we're going to give it to you. It's not fair, in essence, that this other person has paid this additional amount to be in a program to give you something that was kind of, you just lost it or abused it or whatever, right? So
it's also a very natural time to upsell to a retainer plan. Mm-hmm. When they're in that scenario.
Help me with the name of number three. I didn't like optimize unscheduled opportunities. It's just too wordy. What's the best way to finish that one out? This is the idea of making every minute count or something. What's that?
Yeah.
Dig for the diamonds. Like, pick up the diamonds.
Optimize every day. I don't know how to say it. Maybe just by saying this, it might help. But for me, I hate working a half day because it's just as much time to start a day and shut it down. And everybody had to get up and get ready to come to work, right? So if we're here, let's do it, right? And so, maybe it is squeeze the day, just using every minute and using the opportunity of that there's no time like the present to get it done. I like to think of our practice schedule like a Tetris board, right? It's constantly moving, or piano tiles, that game, that once it goes past, it's gone, right? And so if there's an open spot in the schedule or a place that we can stick someone, that we're going to take care of it today, and take care of it, where we can, and utilizing those times, like you've suggested here, down times and in between times and all of that. So,
yeah, I like that. All right. Is this the right order? Is there anything else we're missing? We've obviously grouped some of these together, but I think it's a pretty good take at what you need to do to both create more top line and save more money.
Yeah. I think some raising good fees goes to number three for me. Yeah.
Okay.
I think raising your fees goes for me to number three probably, but
just look at how hard it is.
Squeeze the Day. Squeeze the Day is such a great name.
I love it. I'm gonna make this change. Not that I don't like incentives, but I do think that some of these other decisions maybe need to come first. I can go to three with this one. That's fine. You know, it doesn't really matter, but
it doesn't. I think that
I don't want to upset Brad. So
you were going to then use these in this order in your practice now or something, right?
Oh, yeah, this is like the priority order. This is what it has to be. I will be uploading this image into the group. This is the first time we've done this, doing a top five like this. And so it seems like people are either in agreement or they've all fallen asleep, you know? So, Kyle, make a lecture about this. Who said that? Luis Gutierrez, thank you. Maybe I will. I do think it's a good topic. And I came up with it. Ha. This is great. No, I'm just kidding. But I couldn't have done it without these guys. I'm going to have to give them credit. They're going to have to get a cut of my honorarium, unfortunately. So I'm kidding. So here's our top five. It is beautiful. I love it. I think this is very much needed right now. Give me 1 second. There we go. Yep. Okay. So let's come back around. Let's finish this whole conversation up. Man, there's some really good comments here. I'm just going to share this one because Mark makes me feel good about myself. All in agreement. Yeah, great. Okay, so we're probably a little bit light on time, so I guess I'll just say it like this. Are there any final words of wisdom before we wrap up? This actually became a longer conversation than I anticipated, and I don't mean that in a negative sense. It's just, man, there's a lot to say about this, and I think a lot of good things were said, and I think this is a nice sort of a crystallization of all those thoughts, and I'm sure you could put it in a different order, but this is our order, so take it for what it's worth. Let's see. I see. Someone's still talking about how I should lecture. Sorry, I shouldn't get distracted by the comments. I'm going away from the comments. Any last words of wisdom? Nick, you want to kick us off with any parting thoughts?
I love the, at Details, majority of our, we're majority owned by customers, by orthodontists. And what I've learned through that is that you absolutely, don't be afraid of the business mindset. You are leaders of teams that count on you and that matter. And the ability to optimize those businesses to grow is valuable. And so don't be afraid of that. I've learned a lot from, the orthodontists that we've worked with and then just throughout all of this, I keep learning. Scott is so stupid smart. And so from a lead perspective, especially, he's been able to really weave together the business mindset with the marketing mindset, with the in practice mindset in a way that, I think is valuable to think through. And so don't be afraid to think of yourself as business owners, because that's exactly what you're doing, despite the clinical focus.
Yeah. Scott, since you got mentioned, you get to go next. It's rules of debate. It's like in those debates, those political debates, he said my name, I get a response. Yeah. I hate those things, but go ahead. This is not that.
Yeah. I think my parting wisdom would be that, that list of five things could take a year or two to really figure out and optimize, to pick one thing and actually do it. Is probably my best advice, because if you do one of those things, your practice will be better off. And when you get that done, you can do the next one.
Yeah, I think that's good. Well said and succinctly said. I appreciate that. Yeah, or you could have an individual committee on each one of these things. You're on the squeeze the day committee. give me three actionable items from that. I don't know. Just an idea. All right, Dr. Brad, bring it home. What do you thought?
I'm a podcast rookie, so this has been a lot of fun. It's actually been fun to do and a blast. So, for me, I think that the big thing is make a game out of this, make it a priority, and make it fun. I know I've helped a lot of people with credit card rates, and so many people I've also talked to about that is they're like, oh yeah, I've been meaning to do that, right? And I think exactly what Scott said, which is make it a priority and do it tomorrow. One of these things on the list, whether it's negotiating something or looking at some sort of overhead thing that you haven't looked at, or whether it's a leaky bucket that you've been meaning to fix forever, is just, I think, start working on it. To me, this is a ton of fun. If I can help anybody, let me know. I'm happy to do it. If you want to come visit my practice, if I can help you in any way, this to me is a fun thing. I feel a way like Robin Hood, like whenever we can kind of save money or kind of beat the system. It feels great to help other people to do the same. And so yeah. I think the only thing I enjoy more than saving money is helping other people do it. So
You said one thing, and could have fooled me by saying you're not a podcast regular, because you're very well spoken, and you could have this I feel like this conversation could go on 2 hours. We didn't even get into personal
finance yet, Kyle.
Like, I know. We didn't get into tax either. I think that, you know, that was a category that probably could have been in the top five, was, you know, figuring out the workarounds as business owners. And there's a lot of them to saving more money. And shout out to it used to be called Doctor Tax Credit. Now it's something. I can't think what they call it. TaxRx, I think. But we save some good money doing that, and just kind of strategically structuring that. And I've got a financial planner that I've known for a long time. And, you know, obviously we always work with them on those sorts of things. And, you know, there's cash balance plans. Yeah, the next one will be personal finance, because there's a lot of other ways to actually have more money in your bank account at the end of the day. Guys, this was excellent. Let me go into a couple quick announcements. They're not really announcements, but I do want to remind everyone here that we are only about a month out from the AAO, which is wild. It's in New Orleans. If you don't know, I'm speaking. I know Scott's speaking. Brad, Nick, are you speaking? You'll be speaking to someone that weekend. Will you be there, Brad?
I'm actually not going to be there this time, so.
What a major disappointment. Oh. No, I'm just kidding. It's a joke. If you were going to be there, I was going to invite you to see my band Relapse, because we're throwing an enormous party. Actually, turns out Nick and Scott both are supporting that party, so thank you. That is not why they're but they are supporting. And I should have made this disclaimer. I have invested in Details and Lead Sigma. I have never invested in Brad, but if he ever gives me an opportunity, we'll figure that out. So, but anyway, coming back to this, my birthday, truly, my 40th birthday is Friday, May the 3rd, and my band Relapse is throwing this huge party called Orthomania. Come in on Friday afternoon. It's going to be that night from 7 until 12. Lead Sigma is the sponsor for the happy hour, which is going to happen from 7 to 8. It's going to be awesome. We are going to throw an enormous party. Trust me. You can buy tickets now. They're at super early bird pricing at neoncanvas.com/orthomania. Also, another shout out to Scott. One thing you may not know about Scott is he has helped in the development of an app that we'll be releasing in May. This has been my big project for the last year. It's going to be an app for Neon Canvas clients. It uses a technology called Contour for lead management. And that is built on and powered by Lead Sigma, which is Scott's company. I hope that wasn't too much of a mouthful there. But the short version is, I had never built an app before. Scott has built all sorts of apps. And it's fun, and it's also a lot of work. But I'm very proud to show that off at the AAO, so come by and see it. Scott, Nick, Brad, anything really quickly to promote? Anything you want to just real quickly, like one sentence? What do you got? What do we need to know about?
Nick, Brad, come talk to us at the AAO about our new generative AI products.
I got nothing to sell. Just shout out to my wife, my kids for putting up. We were on vacation and they're running around, I think, grabbing pizza. And so I got to go meet up.
You're
going to
do what? You're going to spend 2 hours doing what on vacation? This is how we have fun, Brad. This is how we enjoy ourselves.
So, money. Come on.
Exactly. Now, this is a big thing. You're helping hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people. So this is great. This is a big deal. Tell them I said sorry. Scott, you have Lead Sigma, just to clarify. So come to the Lead Sigma booth. Nick, what do you got?
Yep, Orthodontic Details. So we help you save time and money on supplies. Similar to Scott, Scott and I have had fun jamming on different ways to use AI. So we're using AI to analyze your spend and match you with savings opportunities. So come see us at AAO.
Fun stuff. My latest AI usage has been song lyrics, it turns out. So it can do everything. It's amazing. I wouldn't let it just do them entirely, but it helps in part.
Yeah, so I actually used AI to generate a Taylor Swift song based on our annual report last year. So Jackie, who's in Relapse, I'm seeing if she'll maybe sing it for
She probably will if you ask nicely. Yeah. If you're out there listening to this on Apple Podcasts and you're just wrapping up your commute home from work, please give us a 5-star review and subscribe if you don't mind. And lastly, thank you for spending your Monday night with us. I want to thank my guests, Scott Hansen, Dr. Brad. Say your last name one last time. I'm never going to learn it.
Chevatel.
Yeah. I know what it was. This was just a joke. I'm just playing it up at this point. And Nick Wengler. Thank you to Anna, my wife, who makes these cards and puts a little bit of makeup on me, just a touch of powder. I need that. And does a whole lot else. Love you, Anna. Thank you. Also to Alan, to Scott, to Kayla, to Alex, and the TDO team at Neon Canvas. Also, special thanks to tonight's sponsor, Neon Canvas. And from all of us here at the Digital Orthodontist Live, I'm Dr. Kyle Fagala, and I'm signing off. And I'm going to play this amazing song. Thank you, everyone, for joining. We will see you on the next one.